have to make room for people to think freely for themselves. The truth has nothing to be afraid of. Nothing. I have made a commitment at this point to follow truth wherever it takes me. That is scary because guess what? That means, I mean, everything becomes a possibility at this point.
Hello, everyone. Gary here. Got another episode for you. But before I talk about our guest for the episode, let me just tell you a couple things going on. The first one is maybe if you haven't noticed yet, but we like to give away stuff. And we like to give away stuff regularly and often. So what we do is every month we're giving away a book from maybe it's one of our previous guests we've had on the show, somebody who's really influenced myself or Kyle in our spiritual journey. And we just kind of say like, hey, we want other people to have this great material in their hands and read and learn and grow and be challenged and use their mind and all that good stuff. So I guess I'm just telling you, like, you got to jump on Facebook. Well, we don't really use Facebook a lot as much, but Instagram or Twitter, follow us, because all you got to do is retweet or tag a couple people in the posts, and then you get a chance at winning free stuff. So just be on the lookout for those. This last month, we gave away Science Mike's book, Finding God in the Waves, his debut book. That is an awesome read that we're actually using for our little book club through Patreon right now, which you could jump in on if you'd like to as well. Just go over our Patreon website. But wanted to tell you about that because who doesn't like free stuff? And then now let me just tell you about our guest and we'll jump into the episode. So today we have Danny Prada on our show, and Danny is in South Florida. He is the pastor and church planter of a church called Heartway. And him and I got a very similar journey. So I was stoked to get him on the show because basically what happened was he started a church and then lost his faith. Or maybe that's how I would say it. He would phrase it as started to begin his deconstruction. So very interesting, similar kind of journey that myself and Kyle have been on. And so he is somebody that I find a lot of affinity towards. He's still leading this community and walking them through this process of opening their minds, seeing a wider stream in their Christian heritage and tradition, and just trying to actually be a practitioner of this deconstruction. Because as you know, a lot of times it can become you exodus the church and you turn, you kind of like run and you never look back at the thing you came from. So I appreciate that he's somebody has stayed in the game. He's trying to shape a community, help free people from doctrine and beliefs that have been harmful, and just open people's minds in a loving way. So we're going to hear some of his journey, and you're going to hear it a lot from a pastoral lens. So maybe you're somebody that is actually a leader of a community. You're working in a church. I think you're going to love what we're going to talk about. And for those of you that maybe have walked away from a faith community, I think what you're going to hear is that there is hope. There's hope in this Christian tradition. We don't got to bag every single thing that we have changed our minds on. And there are really good people up to some really good work that's redemptive and inclusive that maybe would inspire you to say, hey, I want to look for a community maybe in my neighborhood or near me. So with that, let's just launch into this episode with Danny Prada of Heartway Church. Let's go for it. Hello, everyone. Gary back here with you. Got another episode with all of you, with Danny Prada out in Florida from Heartway Church. Danny, how you doing, bro?
I'm doing awesome, and I'm really excited to be with you, man.
Yeah. So Danny and I, we are like tweeting buddies right now. Is amazing. So what I'm excited about is I've got a couple things, you know, based on some of our Twitter relationship that we'll get into today. But yeah, you are somebody who has kind of caught my eye because it seems like you've been on a similar journey as many of the authors we're talking to on this show and some of the other pastors and leaders that are kind of reimagining faith, spirituality, mm-hmm. church. And so we always like to start with just kind of hearing a little bit about your story growing up. Maybe tell us your theological background, because it's helpful to know what you came from as you move to something new, different in your journey. So just kind of hit us with who you are and where you came from, man.
Yeah, for sure. So I grew up here in the South Florida area, and my parents are both evangelical Christians. So that was kind of the setting that I was introduced to from a very young age. I was a part of a Southern Baptist church most of my life that ended up transitioning many years later in my late teen years into a more non-denominational, seeker-sensitive kind of community. And so when I was 18 years old and I actually began to take seriously my commitment to Jesus, I naturally plugged into that church. And eventually, when I was 19, 20, I got hired. When I was 21, I was ordained as a pastor. And during that time, I went to Palm Beach Atlantic University to study ministry leadership. When I graduated from there, you know, when I was at that school, I made a bunch of Calvinist friends. And so I'm like, oh, this is not a real education. I need Reformed theology. And so I went to Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, and I was studying there under some really prominent fundamentalists, and I loved it. I actually really enjoyed my time back then at that school and at that institution. So shortly after I graduated with my MDiv, I wanted to get some more experience preaching and teaching. At the time, I was doing a lot of worship at the church I was a part of, and so I took a job a chaplain at a homeless shelter in the area. And that was a big deal for me. And during that same time, I started Heartway Church. So we can kind of dive in from there. There's a lot of places I could go, but
yeah. So you come from a pretty steeped in the evangelical movement tradition. Now, as you even think about specifically, like when you were in college, I mean, it sounds like you were really bought in. Like, I believe all this. This is, oh, yeah, this is the stuff. This is what we need to get out into the world. Keep be telling people. But from what I've seen, and our audience doesn't know a whole lot yet, which we're going to get into here, there's been transition in kind of belief set and ideas about doctrine, spirituality, and faith.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, maybe tell us a little bit about what it was like for you in those college years. Like, you're eating this up. I mean, is that accurate to say it like that? Like.
Listen, I don't even think there's much to say, except this will probably be a great example for you to understand who I was. Okay. But basically, 2011, it was my last year in undergrad. I was getting ready to go to Southern Baptist Theological Seminary, and I was steeped in the works of people like Wayne Grudem and John MacArthur and Albert Mohler and John Piper and Mark Driscoll. Well, 2011, the book Love Wins came out. Mm. And when that book came out, I didn't even read the book, but I hated the book.
Oh, yeah.
Because of all of the wonderful blogs that I read that basically condemned it. And when my hero, John Piper, says, farewell, Rob Bell, it is farewell, Rob Bell. So I decided during that time to go to the closet at the church I was a pastor at. And of course, a worship pastor. I was one of the pastors there. And I went to the closet where we kept all of our small group curriculum, and we had all of the Pneuma videos. And without anyone's permission, I took them all and I threw them in the garbage.
Wow.
So, and by the way, now I am like the biggest Rob Bell fanboy in life. Literally gone to see him in several different places over the last 2 years and built somewhat of like an acquaintance type relationship with him. But anyways, that's kind of my story. So from that, here's where a lot of the shifts and transitions started happening. Even when I was a super narrow, strict, reformed guy, and even though I liked a lot of what my professors and some of these theological heroes at the time were saying, I always had a problem, not with what they believed, but with how they held their beliefs.
Okay.
Something bothered me. Even in those days when I was a five pointer, even in those days, something bugged me, I guess because you know, I'm not really someone prone to conflict, and I'm somewhat of a laid back, passive, I'd like to think loving kind of guy. And I just had an issue with how these Christians would treat other Christians who were different than them, because half of my family is Roman Catholic. The other half is charismatic. And when I had heroes like John MacArthur do entire conferences against the charismatic movement, you know, that created an issue with me and with a lot of people that I knew and that I loved who were genuine Christians, but maybe saw things differently than I did. So that right there started me on a quest to really learn from the broader stream of the Christian faith and to start exploring the different traditions throughout our history that have communicated and thought about things in different ways. So that really began a journey for me. And then alongside of that, after I graduated and I became a chaplain at the homeless shelter, that was huge, because as I was working one-on-one with these people who, I mean, there's so much mental illness. I was working with people who were coming right out of prison. I've sat in front of folks who one day, you know, they're happy. 2 days later, they're hanging themselves in the room upstairs. I was confronted for the first time with real suffering right in my backyard. And I realized as I was engaging these homeless people that I did not have a theology that prioritized them. I did not have a theology that made them matter. My theology was all about heaven or hell when you die. Everything was framed around that. And in fact, of course, these are more extreme forms of Calvinist thinking. But in my mind, unless these people converted and became Christians, there wasn't even really a way that I could help them, because I did not think they were capable of improving their lives on their own. And so that just created this existential crisis for me, where I have to really rethink some stuff. And that is exactly what I did. So a lot of the work of N.T. Wright in those earlier days really helped me as I started to reshift my thinking about what it means to be a follower of Jesus. It became a lot less about us going to heaven and a lot more about heaven coming to us.
Okay. Now, how old are you at this time? And how many years ago is this?
When I became a chaplain and then started Heartway Church, I was 25 years old. And that was 3 years ago. So now I'm 28. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so you're going through some pretty big existential crisis questions. Are you alone in this journey, or do you have some friends and mentors that you're able to say, like, hey, come, can I ask you something? Like, you know what I mean? I feel like we all need a guide, right?
Yeah, that's probably been like one of the toughest parts about this journey. I really did not have anybody I could go to with questions about this kind of stuff. I didn't have many people that I can express myself openly and honestly with, because, well, my entire bubble was the Southern Baptist conservative bubble. And so when I started peeking my head out of that box that I was in, I really was all alone. And so I tried to make the Southern Baptist thing work for a while. I tried to just like be undercover progressive while trying to like help bring some change into the SBC world. But that just didn't work for long. Eventually, those ties had to be cut. And one of the most heart-wrenching parts of this entire process for me, you know, because first of all, I don't even feel like I asked for this. This whole thing just kind of happened to me.
So true. Yeah.
I was very happy believing what I believed and having all of my T's crossed and my I's dotted theologically. In my certainty, I was very comfortable. So one of the most heart-wrenching parts about this has been losing a ton of relationships. And then on top of that, when I became more vocal about some of these shifts that I was making theologically at my church, that caused some of the funding relationships that I had built with certain churches in the SBC world that caused some of that to stop. And so I think it was right around the year and a half mark, we lost our funding as a new church plant. And typically, for those of you who don't know, it takes a new church about 3 to 5 years to become self-sustaining. So that kind of presented a whole nother issue as well. But at some point, I had to say my integrity matters more than what people think about me or what money is coming in. Because if I don't have joy in what I'm doing, if I don't have my integrity, I don't have anything.
Wow. I mean, I can relate to you so much in that feeling of like, okay, at some level, you know, if you go on this journey, you're going to have, there are some things that are going to go away. They'll be taken away from you and then you'll choose to walk away from. And, it's painful. It's hard to make that decision.
I have a friend of mine who's, he was an old coworker of mine at the mega church I used to work at. And these days he's kind of been through so much church hurt. And then on top of that, he has had a lot of questions about Christian theology and he hasn't received any satisfying answers. And so all of that jumbled together over the last 3 years for him has led him towards atheism. And so he's still a close friend of mine and we talk all the time. But something that I try to share with him is that what was presented to him as Christianity is just one segment of Christianity, but it doesn't represent the whole. And what I've realized is so many people are completely ignorant of the fact that the Christian tradition is very wide and very broad, and there are many different streams, and there are lots of different brilliant Christian thinkers throughout church history from the left and the right who have thought about all of the big questions we ask whenever we begin our deconstructive process. And they've come to many different conclusions. So because of my seminary training, I feel like I knew there was a bigger world out there that I could explore before I just threw everything away. But there are so many Christians out there who don't know that there are options. For them, what I was told is Christian truth, period. So I like to say there is no such thing as Christianity. There are Christianities, because you get 10 scholars in a room, they're all going to tell you different things about almost every different subject. I mean, in my library, I have literally about maybe 15 to 20 books, and their title is 3 views, 4 views, 5 views on everything, you know? So most Christians haven't agreed on anything for a really long time. And so if people aren't told that there are options, they let go way too early. So, you know, at our church, I like to say, don't confuse your ideas about God with God. You have to learn how to make a distinction between those two things. There's a difference between faith and belief. Faith is about relationship. Faith is about trust in the mystery that undergirds all reality. Faith is very personal and intuitive. But beliefs, you know, those change. But your beliefs can change while your faith remains the same. And so I try and help people make that distinction so that they can know, listen, it's okay to ask questions and it's okay to make shifts in your beliefs. But if you are a person who is deeply inclined to trust that there is more to life than just what can be tested under a microscope, you don't have to lose that just because some of your beliefs are falling apart. So, and I hope I'm not just yapping too much, but something else that I've seen is oftentimes when Christianity and faith is presented as something that is all about doctrine and dogma, well, when the doctrine and dogma fails you, you lose your faith. And so I'm trying to move people from Christianity as a system of belief to Christianity as a way of life. And there's a major difference, because if Christianity becomes about following the way of Jesus, then how we talk about God and Jesus and what happens when we die and the problem of evil and all of this other stuff, how we talk about stuff, when that becomes secondary, you know, now we can chat in a way that is generous and that is, you know, not so narrow and rigid. We can leave room for people who see things differently than we do. So.
Yeah. And this is one of the fascinating things to me about what you're up to is that what I've found is that in this world of deconstruction related to Christian faith, there really aren't a whole lot of, I would call them just practitioners in like the pastoral kind of way. So, you know, like you can even look at our show. We have a bunch of authors and guest speakers, you know, theologians. And so then it's like, okay, now where does the rubber meet the road? And that's one of the reasons I really wanted to get you on here is because you are a practitioner going through a deconstructive journey, trying to take a community through that with you. What in the hell are you thinking? You're crazy. You know what I mean? So what's up with that? Talk to me about that.
You hit the nail on the head. Part of the frustration I've had, and I totally get it. You know, like I heard Kent Dobson on your podcast. I love Kent and I love his book. I still watch his teachings from Mars Hill. I listen to his podcast every week. Rob Bell. Oh my God. I love Rob Bell. But unfortunately, for some reason, some of these folks have felt that they have to move beyond church. And I get it. Trust me. I'm tempted to do that. And guess what? One day I may do that. So I'm not saying that's wrong and those people are bad. Those people are freaking awesome. But we need their voice in the church. The hard part about it is at some point you've got to ask yourself as a human being, do I want to spend all of my energy and time trying to convince people who don't want to be challenged? Yeah. And I want to people to change their mind who don't want to change their mind, or am I going to use my time and energy to focus on people who are open and receptive? And so I get it. Trust me. I just think we need to have some more people who kind of stick with it, in the church context and see what can come from it. That's why I admire someone, people like Brian McLaren so much, because, he is somebody who has been through the fire. I mean, when you Google his name, it's funny because I went to go see him speak yesterday at a church here in the area. And I put on my Instagram, hey, love Brian McLaren. Search his name on Amazon. I have a book that you see with his name on it. And I thought to myself, I was like, you know what? A lot of these folks that are on my IG or my Facebook and Twitter, they don't really like know about Brian. So I'm sure they'll Google his name. What will happen if they Google Brian's name? And I just thought about that. And on my way home, I Google Brian McLaren. And like the third entry there is the false teachers, Brian McLaren. And then I search Brian McLaren's name on Facebook. And the second entry underneath his name is Brian McLaren exposed. I'm like, oh my.
Oh, wow. You know?
If you listen to Brian speak and you watch him live, I mean, such a kind-hearted, open-hearted person, and he is still an advocate for church. And so I believe the job of the pastor is to kind of help tread that middle ground between the best of Christian scholarship and the everyday person who wants to be a follower of Jesus. And there aren't enough people bridging the gap. Most of the stuff that happens in the world of academy and scholarship never gets down to the local church level.
That's so true. Yeah.
So, again, people only believe what they're told, and they don't know that there are other options. They don't know that people have been reflecting on these issues. And so I'm trying to kind of bridge that gap there. For me, listen, it would have been much easier to have a church filled with progressives. Mm-hmm. I mean, for me, it would be much easier if everybody in my church agreed with me. But I don't think that the body of Christ, okay, I don't think Christianity will ever come to a unity of truth. That has never been the case, despite what some conservatives will tell you. Mm-hmm. We can never come to a unity of truth, but we can always come to a unity of love. And so what would happen if church became a school of love? And what if our goal became to help people become the most loving version of themselves? That's what I'm interested in. And so at Heartway, I want to live within that tension of we have people from all over the spectrum, theologically, politically, and even though we may not see eye to eye, we can still walk hand in hand. There's a way to do that, but it only happens when you open yourself up to just the reality of interpretive pluralism when it comes to theology. I mean, this happens when you go to the movies. We can all go to the movie, and I ask one person, how do you like it? And they say it was great. I ask the person who was sitting right next to them, how do you like it? Oh, it was the worst movie I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
So we bring different perspectives. We all have different cultural experiences that we bring to our theologizing and to our interpretation of scripture. So if we can acknowledge that, and if we can learn how to prioritize orthopraxy over orthodoxy and allow a belief to be discussion, allow and not be threatened by those who see things differently than we do, then we can start doing something special. And I know that this is possible because for the very brief amount of time that I was conservative, but reading the Peter Enns and the Rob Bells and the Richard Rules and the Barbara Brown Taylor and Rachel Held Evans, and you know, there was a little period of time where I was like, I don't like everything they say. I don't agree with them, but I'm interested and I'm curious. And I definitely can't just say those people over there are not Christians. So it's possible. We just need to help people get there.
Yeah.
And listen, at Heartway Church, and this is maybe a conversation for another time, but I am moving our church into the multi-faith conversation. What does it look like for us to partner with people of different religious belief for the common good? And I told our folks just last week, I preached a sermon called Jesus, Moses, Muhammad, and Buddha Walk Into a Bar.
Yeah,
and
I listened to it. It's great.
And I talked about in the beginning my experience in a bar on the other side of the world with imams, rabbis, and pastors. Anyhow, what I tell our folks is, listen, if we can't get along amongst ourselves as people of the way, as followers of Jesus, as those who self-identify as Christians, how in the world are we supposed to get along with people of other religions? And I said, well, that's why this conversation is so much over people's heads, because we're still arguing about should we have guitars in church, or should infants be baptized or not, or predestination and free will. And I mean, we argue about the dumbest stuff. And so I think it's time for us to start realizing Christians have seen almost every issue in many different ways. And there is no one way that is the right way. Once we can admit that, we can begin to make progress. So what I tell our folks is learn how to hold your beliefs with an open hand instead of a closed fist. Most of us hold our beliefs with a closed fist. And if someone disagrees with us, we're going to clobber them over the head with our fist.
Yeah.
Let's hold our beliefs with an open hand. And let's offer our beliefs as gifts to the world, not dogmas that we threaten people with. So another beautiful picture that I've given to the church is think about Christianity as a choir. We're all singing one song, but every person in the choir has a different part. You've got the soprano, the alto, the tenor, the bass. Everybody's singing different parts, but all together we're singing one song. And so we as Christians, I believe, are singing the song of Christ, you know, Christ crucified. That is what determines for us everything. Jesus is the one who shows us what it means to be God and what it means to be human. And so my definition of a Christian used to be people who adhere to the Apostles' Creed and the Nicene Creed. And that was when I was like trying to be very minimalist. because my list used to be way longer. And that's the thing I also realized, side note, you know, I gave up on the idea of Christian orthodoxy when I realized everybody has a different definition of what that is.
So true, man.
My definition of a Christian is somebody who orients their life and their faith around the person of Jesus. Christians are people whose relationship with God is mediated through Jesus. And I was able to come to this conclusion of what I think a Christian is by interacting actually with a lot of more liberal mainline scholars, someone like Marcus Borg or John Dominic Crossan or William Barclay. These are people who the deity of Christ is going to be up for grabs there. I mean, that's that's challenged. The Trinity is going to be challenged. The preexistence of Christ is going to be challenged. Those are, I mean, when it comes to traditional Christian orthodoxy, that's central, that's foundational. and yet the issue for me was like, here I am, okay, and I believe at the very minimal level, you have to adhere to these doctrines to be considered a Christian. And even at that level, like I had already become a universalist by that point, or a hopeful universalist, you know, at that point, oh my God, inerrancy went away, woof, long time ago. But I held to the creeds, and that was my thing that was like keeping me in. And I remember reading these people, and I'm like, I cannot in good conscience say, first of all, it's nobody's job to say who's in, who's out. That's a huge problem. But I can't in good conscience say these people technically aren't Christians because they don't hold to these certain doctrines. And so that's when I realized, what is Christianity? It's not about adhering to a certain belief system. It's about following the way of Jesus. Jesus never said, believe these doctrines about me. But he always said, follow me. So that's the core of it, I think.
So now, how is this working? So you're talking about God in a whole new way with many of your people that attend Heartway. So, I mean, are you having essentially every weekend you got the one person that's, what are you saying? You're leading everybody astray. But then maybe you have the other people that quietly come up and they're just like, thanks for talking about what you just did this last Sunday, you know what I mean? Like, what does that look like? How is that happening?
Well, I have been shocked at and surprised at how well received some of my content has been for our people.
Okay.
There are folks who come with religious baggage and church baggage that have to unlearn a lot of things. But there are also at our church. And I would say this is probably the majority of people, young folks, millennials, who are Christians, but they don't have the baggage that those who grew up in church have. Or they're not Christians and they just like hearing me talk and now they're considering Christianity. And for them, all this stuff is like, duh, isn't this what y'all are supposed to believe? Like, if this doesn't include everybody, if this isn't actually bringing about change in the world, I mean, what's the point, you know? So there's a mix of folks. One of the guys who I would say brings some of the more religious baggage, he said something to me after one of our services. I still think it's probably one of the best compliments I've gotten to this day in our short, 2-year history since we launched. And he said to me after service, Danny, you have completely ruined my Christianity.
Oh, whoa.
Right after he said, but in a good way.
And that's it.
Oh, man. He's like, Danny, I've been listening to preachers for so many years and I have never heard some of this stuff. And even though a lot of what you say is difficult for me, I'm open to it and I like where you're going with it. And so we have those folks. And then, of course we have had people leave the church over some things that I've said. Here's the deal. I am not here as a pastor trying to like crush everybody's ideas of God. I actually think doing that and taking that route is very unloving. I mean, there may be some people called to, Twitter and Facebook and blog world to just like demolish fundamentalism. I don't think that's my calling. And, I think we have to meet people where they are. Okay, if we are people who believe in this whole incarnation thing, I think we need to meet people where they are and then slowly lead them and take them to where God wants them to be. And so I only give people at my church what I believe they can handle. I try to spoon feed our people stuff. I don't drop truth bombs on Sunday morning. I even had a guy this last weekend, as we talked about the way God relates to other religions, I had someone say to me, he's one of like my close leaders, and I'm raising him up to hopefully pastor one day. And he said to me, he's like, I see what you did there, man. I was like, what do you mean? He's like, this was a long time coming. Like you've laid the groundwork this past year for our church to be able to hear what you're saying and actually like internalize this and not resist it with everything inside of them, because you've introduced some of these themes and you've talked about some of this stuff before. And that was just confirmation for me that, hey, we're kind of going down the right track. And it's been hard though, because my first, and mind you, I'm still a beginner in this stuff, man. My journey of deconstruction and reconstruction, I feel like has had to be, sped up more than normal folks, because I have felt this pressure of leading a group of people, you know? So I have to like kind of land somewhere.
Yeah, I gotta have something here. Yeah.
You know, so I have felt that pressure, but in I would definitely say that first year, it was very hard for me not to be angry. I was mad at the people who taught me the things that they taught me. Okay. I was mad that I was a part of that, and that, you know, these people were still communicating this stuff to the world as Christianity, and it was very easy for me in those days to just be reactionary. And what I realized was, very quickly, I caught myself because I found other progressive leaders mirroring me back to myself. But I would see some very prominent folks just all day on Twitter arguing with people, all day on Facebook arguing with people. And I realized, oh, wait, conservatives don't have a monopoly on fundamentalism and narrow-mindedness. Like, progressives can be fundamentalists too.
Mm.
If we only think, hey, this is the way and all other ways need to be extinguished. And if we don't realize and recognize that, hey, at one point, like, I was where they are. It's very easy, you know, to think like, oh, I'm progressive. I'm enlightened. I'm woke. Here, and all these other people are down here. It's like, no, relax. Okay. First of all, no. Okay. Maybe like Richard Rohr came out of the womb like that, but no. The rest of us, normal human beings, you probably went through a phase where you were doing the very thing that you're now criticizing. Let's criticize. Okay. Fine. Let's be real and honest about the state of Christianity. But we're not in the business of demolition, you know, and hate and anger and reactionary living. You know, we're in the business of healing and restoration and human flourishing. And so I'm still figuring out what does that look like? You know, but at least in our church, I want to make room for people who are different than me. And so what I tell our folks is, my job as your pastor is not to tell you what to think, but to teach you how to think.
Yeah.
You know, I want to equip you in that way. And I want you to know that your voice matters here, even if it's different than mine. Now, with that being said, I don't have tolerance for mean-spiritedness. I don't have tolerance for criticizing people's intentions. I don't have tolerance for the H word, okay, heresy. I don't have tolerance for, the self-righteous approaches that most people take when they are engaging with other people who think differently than they do. But if you are willing to dialogue and have conversation, That is like the minimal ground for us. If you're willing to have dialogue and conversation, if you're willing to acknowledge Christianity is bigger than the box that you're in, if you can have a generous orthodoxy, then you can be a part of what we're doing. And so this year we're actually doing in the summer, I'm taking 3 months in the summer, right? June, July, August. And once a month, I'm going to have somebody from a different tradition within our faith to come and share with us about their background and really? about the way that they express and live out their Christianity. So we're having an Episcopalian priest come in June. I'm having an African-American friend who comes from a more, charismatic Assemblies of God stream coming to share with us. Then I'm having hopefully an Anabaptist friend of mine coming to share with us. And so I want to expose people to the beauty of the body so that they can know like there are options here, and this is a lot better than you probably ever imagined.
Wow. That's just even as you talk about that, what a beautiful visual of the body of Christ, right? Like that it is this expansive, inclusive, wide stream that we come from. And man, I love that you brought up that point that there's this big missing gap between what is preached from a stage at a church versus what's taught in a seminary. And I'm like, that's the thing I feel very passionate about. We got to start to introduce people to this content that we all get taught. And part of me is like, why aren't we? What is it? Is it some kind of, and maybe speak to this a little bit if you have some thoughts on it. Is it that we're just kind of putting on a facade of trying to keep people happy and make sure we're patting on them? Like, what is it?
Well, it gets obviously very tricky when your salary is connected to this, and when close relationships are connected to this. For example, in my situation, I grew up as a people pleaser, and the people that I wanted to please the most were my parents. Their affirmation and their acceptance of me is what has mattered more than anything in the world to me. But unfortunately, I think in an unhealthy way, but my parents are incredible and they're awesome. And because they gave me the world, I want to make them proud. And so I've always tried to be perfect for them. My parents are my biggest fans, and without them getting up every morning, setting up our church, staying and being the last ones to leave and locking up. And then not only that, but giving generously to the work that we're doing. And I don't ask them for this. They just do this out of their love for me. Without them, none of this would be possible. However, especially my father, he comes from a Church of God background. His father was a Church of God minister. Very, very strict and traditional and not like what we're talking about today.
Yeah.
Even in my context, I have had to wrestle so much with, if I say this, how is this going to affect my relationship with Pops?
Mm.
And to my shame, I would say there are some things I should be saying that I still don't, precisely because of that. He continues to surprise me in terms of just always affirming me and loving me. And even if he disagrees, he's like, I'm cheering you on. But still, I think about that. I think about that a lot. And so I can't imagine like how other folks, what other stuff people have to deal with when it comes to relationships and then salaries. I mean, fear is a big part of it. And then the other part of it too, unfortunately, is some people, believe it or not, some pastors and leaders, of course, more in the conservative seminaries, they're not being exposed to the wider, broader body of Christ. And they're not introduced and exposed to the theology of mainliners and liberal Christian thinkers. And if they are, like in my case, it's simply not, it's not to listen and it's not to learn. It's to say, this is what you don't say. This is wrong. This is the compromise. So our what we are taught is presented to us in a very one-sided way. Already, liberal was such a bad word for me. Mainline was such a bad word for me. Progressive was so bad. You don't even get close. And what I started to recognize was, my goodness, in those days when I hated basically what liberals and progressives and mainliners were doing, when I thought that was compromise, when I thought that was heresy and the spread of false doctrine, I really didn't even know half of what those people were saying. And I wasn't even really introduced to most of what they were thinking. I was just given this straw man that I could dismantle and that people can cheer me on when I do, because they've all just heard the same straw man and listened to the same arguments and want to be reaffirmed in their stupidity. And I'm sorry, maybe I shouldn't have said stupidity, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
So I can't speak for all evangelical seminaries, okay? But the one that I went to, this, I wasn't presented with the options. You know, this is the gospel. Penal substitutionary atonement is the gospel.
Yeah.
Okay. This is how it is. Exclusivism is the gospel. And so that's, I think, what one of the big issues is. But you know what, man? Like, at this point, being able to experience so much of the beauty of the body, not just now, but just even moving back beyond our Protestant beginnings, you know, like back in the day for me, it was like, yeah, I mean, before the Protestant Reformation, this whole thing got super corrupt. So we are the bearers of truth. That's what I thought. And I know that I was in a very extreme line of thinking, but there are people like that. I have friends like that. I had a guy the other day on my Facebook. They're doing a conference in my, you know, area in South Florida. And I don't know if I'm getting this exactly correct, but it was like enemies of the gospel or hindrances to the gospel. And one of the things on the list was social justice. I'm like, oh my gosh, this stuff is like, these are Acts 29 people, you know, and I'm not saying all Acts 29 people are like that. Okay. But these folks in particular are. And so as I've experienced just so much beauty, as I've actually engaged in personal friendships and had personal relationships with people from different streams of the Christian faith, I realized, my goodness, I need all of it. I need the Catholic sacramentality, you know. I need the Eastern Orthodox mysticism and love. I need the Pentecostal fire. I need the evangelical piety. I need the mainline social justice. We cannot afford anymore to stay in our little bubbles. We have to start listening to what other Christians have been saying and figuring out how we can all get along. It shouldn't be that hard, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, man. Well, gosh, I have more questions here. Let's just do one more, and then I want to hit you with a couple quick ones to wrap up our time. So I want to read this quote of yours from Twitter that was just like one of those, wow, that's the stuff. But you said this, and I just want to hear you kind of comment, explain a little bit. But you said, I was always told to love God with all of my mind. Little did I know how many people I would piss off when I actually started using it. Oh my gosh, that speaks so much to my journey, many of my friends, and just talk about that a little bit with us.
Well, you know, ultimately, for most people, for a lot of people who come from the background that you and I share, theology is basically repeating what you've been told, to the point where I used to say this, a ton of people still say this. They say, if it's new, it's not true.
Ooh,
oh my
God.
Oh my gosh, please. You know, I mean, that's just a horrible way to see the world in my lowly opinion. But for many of us, we were told theology is about simply regurgitating what we've been told is true, simply regurgitating what the Bible says. And I love, Moltmann says a lot along these lines, the way he theologizes. But one quote in particular from Karl Barth, I believe, he says, and I'm paraphrasing, our job is not to say what the Bible says. Our job is to say what we need to say in light of what the Bible says.
Okay.
And that's a very loose paraphrase, but his point is like the scriptures are a conversation starter, not a conversation ender. Mm. And I spent a long period of time with questions. I had a few doubts here and there, but I automatically shut them off and did not pursue those breadcrumbs because I did not think I was allowed. I did not. And part of my struggle when it has come to this deconstruction process has been, and this has been the worst part about it, it has been the guilt that I felt.
Okay.
I'm not allowed to be thinking like this. I'm not allowed to be crossing these boundaries. I'm not allowed. I'm being unfaithful to Christianity. That guilt is something that kept me up very late at night for a long period of time. And so, yeah, I mean, I was told love God with all your mind. And then I pissed a whole bunch of and I started using it. And, you know, at the end of the day, we have to make room for people to think freely for themselves. The truth has nothing to be afraid of. Nothing. I have made a commitment at this point to follow truth wherever it takes me. That is scary. That is scary because guess what? That means, I mean, everything becomes a possibility at this point. If I got to a point, I don't even like to think about this because the idea of God, you know, it means so much to me. I'm so passionate about Jesus. I don't even like to think about this, but in all honesty, if my journey were to lead me towards atheism, I would rather have integrity and joy than just pretending and following the party line and being miserable on the inside. I can't do that. So thankfully, I think, you know, there's so many wonderful Christian thinkers out there who have, I mean, they're doing such great work. And they've all the questions I've had, they've already asked it. I don't even think there's really I personally don't think there's any reason to leave our faith tradition. But you know, some people feel the need to, but the truth has nothing to be afraid of. And so we should follow it.
Yeah. It reminds me of one of our previous guests, Ryan Meeks, who, man, you'd love him. He said, people desire belonging more than they desire truth. Mm. And I feel like what you're hitting on here is we got to be people that rather than just preaching from a stage, like we are people that seek and pursue the truth.
Yeah.
That's got to be a lived experience for us rather than a nice phrase we share to inspire people, you know?
And that's the thing. If we really believe in incarnation, then that means the very foundation of what we believe, the very foundation of our faith is embodiment. So how in the world can a religion and a faith that is supposed to be about lived reality and embodied truth, how in the world can a religion like that get so lost in abstract theological concepts?
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense, but that's what it has become for so many people. It's just an exercise of the mind. I like how Marcus Borg puts it. He's like, for a ton of folks, salvation is by syllables. Just believe the right things and have the right doctrines and I'm safe and I'm in and I'm good. But my life can be very un-Christ-like, you know? So I accepted Jesus in my heart, but I can be hateful towards LGBTQ people. I can work against the rights of women. I can be Islamophobic. I mean, but we have a bunch of people who claim the name of Christ, but who live lives that look nothing like him. Mm-hmm. We have been the cause of most atheism in the world. People like Christ, but they don't like Christians. I want us to try and close that gap. So,
yeah. Oh, this is great stuff, man. So good getting to spend some time with you.
Yeah, sure.
So let's hit a couple things here. So first off, just tell our audience, how can they learn more about your church and your work and, find maybe your podcast and some of your teachings?
Well, social media is always the easiest way. Danny Prada, D-A-N-N-Y, P-R-A-D-A on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can find my stuff. I get a little crazy on Instagram, so y'all just need to know. Anyway, so you could do that. And then our church is called Heartway Church. So you can check us out at heartwaychurch.com. You can follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Heartway Church or / Heartway Church. And we have a podcast where really that's like what I focus much of my time on. I'm currently working on my D-Men from Fuller. And so I am so busy. I don't think I'm going to be doing much else but sermonizing. So if you want to kind of tap into what we're doing here in the South Florida area, you can search Heartway Church on iTunes and subscribe to our podcast, or you can find us at heartwaychurch.podbean.com.
All right. Love it. Okay. Now, next question. Tell our audience the most influential book you've read in, I don't know, the past 6 months, and why. Or if you're a big reader, you could say like past month or 3 months, yeah, whatever fits you.
No, that's a really hard one. You know, I guess I'll say, I have to say two books. It'll be Into the Silent Land by Martin Laird, which is a book about contemplation. And the other book would be Falling Upward by Richard Rohr. And if we had more time, I'd explain to you why. But all I'll say is the practice of contemplation and beginning to open myself to the mystical stream of Christian faith has really given me a new sense of passion and fire for Jesus and for spirituality. So for those of you who are going through some intellectual stumbling blocks, tap into what some of these folks are doing, and I think you will be very pleased.
Awesome, man. Okay, last one for you. Tell us this might be kind of challenging because there's probably a lot, but tell us one of the most significant fundamental beliefs you have changed your mind on because now you look back and realize that it was actually destructive.
My view of the Bible.
Okay.
Yeah. I think that inerrancy can be, not always, but can be very harmful when we use the Bible as a weapon. And we can get into this maybe the next time we hang out, but the one thing, because I know we got to go, but the one thing I'll leave you with is how people read the Bible and how people interpret the Bible says a lot more about them than it does about God.
Oh.
And so I want to help people approach the Bible and in a way that is critical, but in a way also that is childlike and innocent. And I know those are two polar opposites, but I think there's a way for us to use our minds, maybe challenge some things that we read, and yet still find beauty in these sacred texts from our past. So, you know, there's a lot to say about this, but yeah, that's been a big one for me. Big shift.
Ooh, yeah, that'll have to be the topic for our next conversation. Dive into that some more.
I'm trying to control myself because I can go for a while.
All right, yeah. Man. Dude, well, thank you so much for spending some time with us. This has been great. I love the work you're up to. I think your voice is one that needs to be shared more and heard more. So look forward to more of the work you put out there into the world, man.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me. It was a huge, huge honor. So definitely supporting what you guys are doing.
All right. Well, all of our friends out there, we thank you for joining us on this episode, and we'll see you next time.
All right.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to this episode of The Voices Podcast. If you want to get the links for anything we talked about today, they will be in the show notes on patreon.com/voicespodcast. If you go there, you can scroll down to the episode and you will see all the links right there.
And if you're interested in becoming a supporter of the show, we are on Patreon. So you can go to our Patreon website and you'll see different levels of supporting the show. That helps us to get different guests on the show, put more time and resources to this. And one of the things we want to do is be a resource to you on your spiritual journey. That was the whole vision behind this in the first place. So one of those ways we do that is at different levels, there are different resources that we'll make available to you as you are working through reimagining faith.
We also want you to be able to join the conversation with us. So make sure you leave us a comment on Facebook or tweet at us on Twitter. We are Voices Podcast on Facebook and at Voices Pod on Twitter. Let us know what you thought, agreed with, disagreed with, and what you want to hear more about.
All right. Thanks for listening.